With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You know him from the San Jose Mercury News or any one of the Bay Area News Group's fine newspapers. He is columnist Dieter Kurtenbach. What's going on, Dieter? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. After the Warriors come out and decide they want to play basketball, it's a lot easier to do my job.
Yeah, how about that? I enjoyed your lead. Here's Dieter's lead from last night. The Warriors promised they would come correct to Friday night's game against the Denver Nuggets after, and then here's the key, after the 33-point home blowout loss to the Celtics on Thursday. Pride had kicked in for the defending champions. Do you think that it's as simple as that? They were embarrassed and they just said never again?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's kind of the jarring part about all of this, because we knew that the Warriors could do this, or at least we should have known that the Warriors could do this. It just depends on if they want to. And want is a very fleeting thing, particularly for this team, which has been gearing up for the playoffs all year. I mean, they've been trying to fast forward through this entire season since day one and to get to the postseason. So it is interesting seeing the juxtaposition of a game where they didn't come right against the Celtics and then basically packed it in after trying to make a little bit of a run at it. They just said it wasn't their night. We'll call it a night. And then what happened Friday night and just coming out and running the Nuggets off the court and reestablishing the number one seed in the Western Conference. I just don't know how long this is going to last. And given the amount of changes that this team has had to make year over year and in season, I don't know if necessarily the habits of championship basketball have been established or reestablished for this team.
Mm-hmm.
But I know when they turn it on, there's no one that can play with them. The question is, will they be able to turn it on a consistent basis come the postseason? I imagine they will, but I still have that lingering question. I would like to see them go on a run here with Cousins in tow, playing the minutes that he's playing, that indicate, hey, we got this. We're not going to need more than five games against any of these teams.
Yeah, and to your point, I'm going to read another piece from your column in case people missed it, because I love this quick three-paragraph chunk of it. It was championship level play, both engaged and kinetic. A top shelf performance the Warriors have dusted off only on extremely special occasions this season. The Warriors left no room for interpretation with their performance on Friday. They're still the team to beat in the Western Conference, and their best is a level or two above anyone else's. But now comes the hard part, sustaining that level of play. Dieter, that's not only great writing, but it's dead on. And I ask you, does the addition of Andrew Bogut, does that kind of push you towards the side of, yeah, they can sustain this? And do you think the news that Bogut's coming had any impact on Boogie last night?
Maybe the latter part. The Boogie didn't really want to talk. I think he was pretty angry at some columns. I know I was part of this chorus, and I stand by it, that his defensive liabilities had posed a real big problem for the Warriors going forward, and that's something that will have to be mitigated over the next 4 weeks. But the Bogut thing is interesting. Talking to somebody the other day, and they said, you know, Boogie's biggest contribution might have come before he ever stepped on the court, because he created some excitement around the Warriors for months at a time with, oh, Boogie's coming, Boogie's coming, Boogie's coming. And they had to get right before he came because they didn't want him to kind of come in and have to be the savior. And that's when they went on their last great run there. Maybe Bogut has somewhat of the same thing. It's almost like you're constantly giving your petulant child a new toy to kind of get their activity levels up and to spark some joy in them. And Andrew Bogut is
take their phone away, like, Dieter. Take the kid's phone away.
Exactly. Andrew Bogut, I know that Klay Thompson is thrilled that he's back. I know that the veterans are going to be thrilled that he's back. It's good to have a solid defensive backup for this team. So X's and O's wise, it's an excellent concept. Maybe this is just another thing that helps this team get over the hump. It just comes down to if they care enough. And it seems as if every time they've gone out and had a game like they had against the Nuggets on Friday night, they've just decided, like, we showed it to you, and now we're going to put it back in the bag. And they just can't do that at this juncture, because if they put it back in the bag, then they're going to have to kind of pull it out in desperation right before the end of the regular season. And that's just no way to enter the playoffs, even though they're far more talented than any team they're going to face in the first, second, maybe even third round.
The voice you hear is that of Dieter Kurtenbach. He's a columnist for the San Jose Mercury News and the Bay Area News Group. You can follow him on Twitter at D. Kurtenbach. The last name is spelled K-U-R-T-E-N-B-A-C-H. The criticism of DeMarcus Cousins defensively is fair. I mean, there's no doubt. But at the same time, the Warriors, even before he came back, Dieter, they were subpar defensively when matched up to what we know they're capable of doing. And Andrew Bogut has been, you know, he's been kind of the acquisition has been painted as a move to shore them up defensively. But he and Boogie, I mean, it's not like he's going to go out and be able to defend wings the way Boogie can't. If they want a center to do that, it's going to have to be Looney, because Bogut's very similar to DeMarcus defensively to me.
No question. And I also think that Jordan Bell getting some run as of late, and he's playing a much simpler game. We'll see if that translates in the coming weeks, because we've kind of gotten hints of this before and then it's faded away. But the Warriors can go four deep outside of Draymond at center once Bogut gets into the fold, and if Bell can kind of maintain this level of play. So that's a good thing. The Warriors love to use the matchup when it comes to center. And Boogie is going to get the majority of run. The Warriors have made that very clear with the amount of minutes that he's been getting, even in bad matchups. But, man, the Bogut thing, I think that it has more to do – I'm not sure if he's going to play all that much, if I'm being totally honest. Uh-huh. I think it has more to do with the fact that DeMarcus, with his inability to really move around all that well, and I don't expect that to change all that much in the coming weeks, he picks up a lot of fouls. And he has to be aggressive on that end of the court just to kind of pass. And
right.
He was aggressive last night against Jokic. Jokic can't move. So that aggressiveness really panned out into an excellent defensive game for DeMarcus Cousins. But there's going to be a lot of games, I imagine, particularly in the playoffs, where Boogie gets two fouls early. And now you have Steven Adams or Gobert or Jokic again or Nurkic in Portland. Those are big guys that you have to put a body into. And when you go to Looney, Looney's gotten ragdolled by some of these big centers in recent weeks.
Great phrase.
Jordan Bell certainly isn't going to stack up. And Draymond Green, you don't want to have to put him through that wear and tear unless it's crunch time minutes. So just having another big body, I think, is a real big plus for the Warriors, because they just can't trust that Boogie's going to stay on the court with the foul trouble that he's been picking up. And I don't think they expect that to change all that much in the coming weeks.
Talking Warriors basketball with Dieter Kurtenbach. He is a columnist for the San Jose Mercury News. Give me a sense of what that felt like after the game yesterday, because it had to be polar opposite of what happened after the game on Tuesday, to where Kevin Durant, his answers to a pretty innocuous question, had a little bit of an edge to it. You know, no shocker there. He's had an edge to most of what he said. But I would imagine Klay's return and beating down the team that is, you know, the closest to him in the standings, at least, it had to make everything right for a night.
Feel right. I'll give it that. There's still a weird vibe around this team because of the Durant stuff, and there's always a chippiness and kind of a negative energy in those rooms, because we know that it's not going to be a fun back and forth like it had been in the past, and that is what it is, and that's his prerogative, and I can't necessarily blame him for being on guard with it. But I found it interesting, Draymond's comments, which he was very defensive of DeMarcus Cousins, who is a good friend and honestly has been excellent with this team off the court, and he's been pretty damn good on it. But he kept saying that if the Warriors bring the energy, DeMarcus's defense will not be a liability whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
You could say that after Friday night's game. I would like to see a few more examples of that against maybe a center that can actually move before I start, you know, putting that into canon. But I trust Draymond Green's defensive genius on most everything when it comes to that side of the court. So maybe there is something there with that. But again, I just have to see it again. It seemed like everybody kind of had their own agenda of what they wanted to get across talking to people. Klay was in a pretty happy mood, though Klay never really likes talking to the media all that much. So it was a nice change of pace. Steph was typical Steph, just class straight through.
Draymond corporate Steph? Did you get corporate Steph?
I don't think we got totally corporate stuff. I do think that, but it's getting pretty corporate nonetheless.
Right.
And then when Steph wants to lay it on corporate-wise, he can really lay it.
Oh, yeah, corporate Curry's locked in, sure.
And Draymond wanted to get something across. Boogie did not want to talk to us. And, again, that's his prerogative. It's just, mm-hmm. there seems to be a lot of personality sort of diverging in some ways in that locker room. And that's not a negative thing because they're obviously playing together on the court. But kind of you used to kind of understand the general mood that you were going to get on a daily basis. Now you're kind of dealing with individual powers.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco. It's a radio.com sports station and home of the Golden State Warriors. Okay, so last night, for me at least, effectively eliminated Denver from the list of teams that I'm even moderately concerned about as it relates to the Warriors come playoff time. The Rockets, look, when they came in, even though the Warriors were shorthanded too, what they did here, I give them a ton of respect, and I respect Harden's game. Harden didn't even play in that game, and they drilled the Warriors. Was that kind of like a negative version of last night? In that it can't possibly be that bad, and last night it can't possibly be that good.
Maybe I do think that this team does like to ride the high points a little bit more than it likes to dwell on the negative side, because they have that built-in confidence of having done it now for four straight years and having won three titles. So they're always going to get the confirmation bias that comes from big wins. At the same time, I mean, you talk about the powers to be in the West. The Nuggets were never a team that the Warriors necessarily feared, and we've now seen in their last two times that they've played the Warriors making a fairly clear attempt to humble them. And the first time around in Denver, that was almost personal. This time around, the Warriors had something they needed to prove to themselves, as well as the added bonus of getting some separation for the number one seed and telling Denver that they're not at the big boys table yet. When it comes to who the top contender in the West is against the Warriors, it alternates in my mind. Houston has one kind of smoke. It is an excellent kind of smoke. I don't trust teams with one kind of smoke when it comes to the playoffs, particularly now that the Warriors have some options at center, or at least theoretically have some options at
center. Yeah, and sorry to jump in here, but I agree with you 100% because you never know when they're going to miss 25 consecutive three-pointers. That's their smoke.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to be fair, they did get off 27 consecutive three-pointers.
Yeah, true.
Impressive stuff. I mean, they know their style, and at the same time, the Warriors know their style, and they've had a year to think about, you know, the things that they might have done differently in those Western Conference Finals, which probably would have been a five-game series had Andre Iguodala not gotten injured.
Right.
But nevertheless, that's how it rolls. I just don't fear Houston as much. I don't think they're as good as they were last year. And last year, I didn't think that was necessarily a true seven-game series. I think that the Warriors lollygagged around for a good stretch of it and really extended it out. I mean, we saw the real Warriors in the second half of Game 6 and 7. Oklahoma City is an interesting concept to me because they have Paul George, and he's playing at a true MVP level. But I don't like their depth. I don't like the fact that Russell Westbrook doesn't know how to shoot a jumper yet and can shoot teams out of it. I just don't think that there's anybody particularly in the Western Conference who scares me from the Warriors' perspective as much as a team like Milwaukee does in the Eastern Conference. But the Eastern Conference has to sort itself out before we can even really entertain those notions. So
Dieter, you went where I was about to go.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid has missed eight games with a knee injury, and that's obviously concerning. The guy has spent a lot of time on the sidelines since he turned pro, but we all saw what he's capable of when the 76ers came into Oracle, and they put it to the Warriors, and Joel Embiid had his way with DeMarcus Cousins, who, granted, he was in the infancy of his return, but I for some reason, I'm more nervous about the 76ers than the Bucks. What is it that scares you in particular about the Bucks?
The Bucks are so long, and they can run that kind of one type of smoke that the Rockets run with Giannis running point. But man, they put shooters around. They're going to stretch out the Warriors. So Cousins is going to be in a pretty tough spot any minute he's on the court, given their lineup. But every time I've seen the Bucks play the Warriors, I'm just constantly amazed at how long their arms are and how in every single passing lane they are. And the Warriors somewhat need to simplify their game in order to beat them, which oftentimes means sort of ham-fisted Kevin Durant isolations, which is still an excellent basketball possession, but it doesn't really unlock the full potential of the Warriors. So it's just a schematic and almost existential undercut to that matchup that I just don't like. And also, we do not talk about the Bucks enough. They're putting up elite-level numbers. I mean, historically, this is what they're doing, albeit against the lesser conference, but what they're doing over there with their net rating and some of the stuff that they're doing statistically is up there with the Warriors in 2015, the year that they shocked everybody and won the title. I don't like that matchup in particular for the Warriors. We'll have to see, obviously, what the next few months bring, but Milwaukee would be the team that I would least want to face if I was a Warriors fan going into the NBA Finals.
Talking with Dieter Kurtenbaugh of the San Jose Mercury. I'm sorry. Yeah, I love you comparing the Bucks to the 2015 Warriors because I was thinking that the same. Look, it was kind of considered that the Warriors, I don't know, leapfrog a step or skipped a step because they lost in the first round the year before they won the title. Normally, teams go through a little bit more of a learning process in the playoffs. Like even MJ's Bulls, you know, they kept right. getting shut down. You think the Bucks are capable of making that type of leap, huh?
Yeah, and mainly because the rest of the teams in the Eastern Conference, I do appreciate you mentioning Philly because if Embiid is back, that is an incredible 1-2-3-4 punch with Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler in tow now. But I really question their depth overall. Not that it matters as much in the playoffs, but it does matter. You're going to need them for a game or two to come through because of the whistles. Milwaukee's up there. I don't see Toronto until Kyle Lowry proves it. I just don't trust him as a playoff performer.
Me neither.
I've seen it too many times now to believe that this is the year everything turns around. Maybe it is, but I have to see it.
Let me entertain me, humor me on this. I think Kawhi being there is so much different than DeMar DeRozan, which is what he was anytime it was the postseason. I think Kawhi is more of a true number one, and while DeMar was there, I think it was almost like 1A and 1B, whereas now it's a 1 and it's a 2, and Lowry's the clear 2.
I can appreciate that. At the same time, you need the two to be a star in order to get to the NBA Finals. And Kyle Lowry has never been a star in the postseason. And frankly, I don't know if it's a mental makeup thing, if it's bad luck, whatever it is, but it'd be a terrible bet now to just presume that, well, Kyle Lowry's going to turn it on come the postseason because he's Kyle Lowry. I mean, maybe it's just a wear and tear thing on him. But yeah, with a rookie head coach, a team that is, man, they are really fun to watch, but they just have kind of this regular season team vibe on them right now.
Yep.
Maybe Kawhi's the difference, but man, I just, and maybe I'll regret this. I honestly feel like I might. I'm talking myself out of it. But man, the Raptors don't scare me in the same way that the Bucks and the Sixers do in the playoffs. And then you still have the Pacers who are hanging around, which sort of indicates the level of play in the Eastern Conference on the whole. So maybe we have to start grading on the curve there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel the exact same way about Toronto. Until they do it, I'm going to think they can't do it. They remind me of, now I don't know if you were in the area at that time, but when Mike Montgomery was the head coach at Stanford. Stanford right, was always going to make it into the tournament. They were always going to win their league because they were a great regular season team, and you knew they were always going to bow out early because they weren't a great tournament team. That's kind of the way I see the Raptors are the professional version of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would like to see them go further. I love watching Pascal Siakam play.
Mm-hmm.
I think Marc Gasol has been a wonderful addition to them. But there's just something, there's a restrictor plate on my mind when it comes to taking the Raptors seriously as a championship threat. And the Eastern Conference is going to be a buzzsaw. So whoever comes out of that is going to be battle-tested. They're also going to have some battle scars. The Warriors, if they can get right going into the playoffs, as we saw last night, they're a head and shoulders better than everybody else in the Western Conference, even some good teams in the Western Conference. If they can get that momentum going and then really kick it into high gear for the postseason, they could get in 4 or 5 games every series, pretty healthy, all things considered, once it gets to June. And then they're going to be playing a team from the East that's probably going to have a little bit of wear and tear on them, if not a lot of wear and tear on them, given how top-heavy that conference is.
Yeah, and I'm thinking Andrew Bogut's not coming all the way here from Australia to not get a ring. He's coming knowing he's going to get a ring. Hey, Dieter, thank you so much. I know I kept you for a long time, but I appreciate you playing along, man. I enjoy your work.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Talk soon.
All right, brother. Take care. That's Dieter Kurtenbach of the San Jose Mercury News, also the Bay Area News Group. They have a number of papers around the Bay Area. Newspapers. You guys remember what that is, right? They're made out of paper, and you can either have it delivered on your porch, or you can do what I do on Saturdays, go get change for $2 and go out to the rusted out yellow box and pump 8 quarters into it and pull out the only Chronicle. I swear, the place that I go to get my Chronicle, I'm not exaggerating. Every single time except once, and I think I've probably done it 150 times, every single time there's only one paper. It's the one in the display window. So either they only sell one paper a day, or I miss the morning rush and I'm lucky that there's one paper in there. What does that have to do with anything we're talking about? Nothing really, but I killed enough time to get us up to the break. Very nicely done. We're going to be getting into some baseball with Bruce Jenkins. If you've heard me with any regularity, you know that there's nobody better in my mind than Bruce Jenkins. Sports writing lost an absolute titan, especially the golf world, in Dan Jenkins. He passed away, I believe it was yesterday, and Bruce wrote a little bit about him, singing his praises. I will sing Bruce's praises as much as he'll sing Dan's, and I will do that with Bruce on the line. I'm Michael Urban. It's 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, all right, all right. I think we've had about enough talking about the Warriors' defense getting right. And it did get right yesterday in a big way. I'm Michael Urban. Thanks for joining us. I will be with you until about 2:45, and then you will hear what is, in my opinion, the greatest college basketball rivalry, which is Duke-North Carolina. Zion Williamson is not playing, and that's a bummer because he's obviously the most exciting player in college basketball, but it's still always a hell of a game when those two teams lock horns. We've talked a lot about the Warriors today, and understandably so. They are, win, lose, draw, they are compelling. Absolutely compelling. Even when they're at their worst, you got to pay attention to it. It's fascinating. And if you are a Bay Area resident who's been here the whole time, you're savoring every single second of this. I certainly am. I was born in San Francisco, spent much of my childhood visiting my grandmother, taking care of us in San Francisco. I went to the University of San Francisco. My dad used to take me to games at what's now Oracle. I don't know, maybe once a month during the regular season. I was 7 years old when the Warriors won that title in 1975. And between then and the start of this championship era, you guys know, it was just terrible, terrible basketball. But I never adopted another team. In fact, I still have Warriors shirts that they're probably 30, 40 years old. Got a bunch of holes in them. I have one of those hats that everybody used to have of their favorite team, and it's so dirty that nobody would even touch it, let alone put it on their heads. And I'm trying to force myself to not take this team for granted. But it's really easy to do that. However, when they struggle, and they've struggled a bit this year, you kind of have to check back in and pay more attention. So in a weird way, their struggles have kept me engaged. I wonder how many fans out there are feeling the same way. We're going to be talking with Bruce Jenkins in a few minutes. If you would like to talk Warriors basketball or Giants baseball or A's baseball, 49ers, Antonio Brown, where's he going? Now he's heading to the Raiders. When I shut it down last night, I thought he was heading to the Bills, and then I woke up this morning, and there was word he might be a Raider.
Just win, baby.
Yeah, because the Raiders haven't had a number one receiver forever. Oh, wait, they just traded one away. Why? Well, I'll tell you what. Truth be told, you give me the choice between Amari Cooper and Antonio Brown, big time going with AB, because something about Cooper, I don't know, I think it's inside the helmet. I don't think he's not a true number one. He has number one body. He runs number one routes. He has everything that you look for in a number one, except, and this is super vague, except like number oneness. I don't know how to describe it, but he doesn't have it. And if you're listening to this and you know Raiders football, you know I'm right. He disappeared way too often to be considered a legit number one in the NFL. Now, of course, he goes to the Cowboys, and immediately has a major impact, just like Khalil Mack did his first game with the Bears. The difference is Mack sustained his level of play the rest of the season, whereas Amari Cooper, yeah, he was great first couple of games. He disappeared. He went back to his disappearing act just a little bit. So if you want to talk about that, 888-957-9570. You can text us, Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. Right now, I'd like to get into a little bit of baseball. And to do that, I want to bring in my sports writing idol, columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, how are you, man?
Herbs, the big left-hander.
Hey, what is it with the last name Jenkins? Is everyone with the last name Jenkins a great sports writer? Dan just passed away. His daughter is a great sports writer. You're my hero. What's going on? I'm going to change my name to Jenkins.
I'd love to say I'm related to Dan and Sally Jenkins, but unfortunately that's not the case. But thank you.
So I saw something in your piece today, the three-dot lounge, and I explained to everybody that without fail, every Saturday I go to the box. They actually sell Chronicles in the box still, Bruce. So I don't know if you're aware of that, but the actual Chronicle is in a box, and I put eight quarters in, and I pull it out to read three-dot lounge. And today I read something that, as usual, when I'm reading your stuff, has me thinking amen and saying yes, yes, yes. You talked to you quoted Tom Seaver about the way pitchers are being babied, and it's still that's the thing that galls me about today's game more than ever. Can you expand on that just a little?
Well, you know, it's all about protecting arms and pitch counts and innings limits and, you know, start them early in the minors, get them conditioned that we're only going to look for you for four or five innings, and then we're going to bring in the relief pitchers. And what has that done? There are more arm injuries than ever before, more Tommy John surgeries, more pitchers breaking down. And when you look back on, you know, it was centered around Tom Seaver, you know, the days of Carlton and Gibson and Seaver, but not just the great guys, but a lot of, you know, middle of the rotation guys are pitching 200 innings year after year in four-man rotations. And I know that's a bygone era, but how is it working better today? And not only is it not working, it's considerably less appealing to me at least, and I think a lot of fans, as opposed to a guy going eight or all going all the way. Seaver, the quote I used was, "What an incredible thing it is when a guy goes all the way. How it feels in his dugout, how it feels to him, mm-hmm. and how demoralizing it is for the other team." Meanwhile, you've used no relievers, okay,
right.
None. If you're using relievers every single day, you know, I don't care if it's just an inning at a time. Some of those guys are going to be burned out in August. It just doesn't make sense to me that we write off the era of Tom Seaver and Koufax and all those guys, Marichal, Vida, as some kind of bygone era when, it, to me, it worked better.
Well, the thing is, if you talk to people who truly know pitching, and one of the producers was telling me this earlier. I forget who he was talking to, but asked about what a young pitcher needs to do to strengthen his arm. And it was a very simple answer. Throw a lot. Throw daily. You know, I'm buddies with Zito, right? And he was a slave to his routine. He never had arm injuries. He was the guy long tossing out to 300 feet. And now you have major league teams telling their guys that they cap long toss at like 150, to which a friend of mine who focuses on pitching, he consults actually with a couple of big league teams. I hope he gets to consult with more to get this going, to allow pitchers to throw more. But he said, look, if you plant an oak tree in a greenhouse, the tree's only going to grow as tall as that roof. But if you plant that oak tree outside, who knows what you're going to get? It's the same thing with arms and long toss.
It crushes me to think of how many guys coming up with great arms and a real competitive nature are being discouraged to reach their potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are they ever going to know if they can be a Marichal or a Tom Seaver or a Bumgarner? Who would kill you before you take him out? You know.
Yeah, there's.
It's really sad.
You know what jumped out to me in your column, Bruce? Again, we're talking with Bruce Jenkins. He's a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. Tom Seaver, he broke into the Mets minor league system. His first year in the minors, 210 innings, and then the next year he's in the bigs and throws 251, and then he averages 265 over the next 13 seasons. And nowadays, Tommy John surgery is almost like an elective surgery for high school kids.
Yeah, you got to get that out of the way around the 10th or 11th grade.
Right.
And then you'll have your second one 2 or 3 years into the bigs.
And everybody thinks that that's going to make them throw harder just because a couple of guys have come back throwing harder and a little bit better. But, yeah, it's crazy. Let's get off that. I'm getting worked up.
Well, you should.
How about this, Bruce? The Giants on the field are more pleasant than off the field these days. When's the last time you were able to say that?
Well, yeah, I mean, off the field has been pretty difficult. I mean, you know, the Larry Bear thing was really very shocking, and shocking and embarrassing, as I mentioned it today. And, you know, you never like to see a guy get pulled over for a DUI. He's the guy who just showed up trying to make the team and could figure prominently considering the weaknesses they have in the outfield.
Yeah, that's Cameron Maben. He's actually playing pretty well.
Yeah, and... And, you know, on top of that, they've had, you know, between Frank Robinson and Hank Greenwald and Peter McGowan and McCovey, I mean, a lot of great ones passed. And they are kind of pleasant on the field. I wouldn't say they're wildly entertaining. Who knows?
Right.
I think I like the team. I don't like them to win it. I think they're overmatched in a lot of ways. But I think they got a lot of pitching, and that's going to carry them a bit.
You know, and one of the things that I hold out hope for with Farhan Zaidi coming in is, I don't know, I might be butchering the last name, but the kid on the Dodgers last year, Buechler, what was his last name?
Walker Buechler. Yeah.
He was kind of allowed to go, you know? It's kind of the opposite of what we've been talking about. He wasn't exactly baby. They kind of let him go, and it worked out. And maybe, you know, I mean, what are they going to do with Derek Rodriguez? He was one of the bright spots last year. Are you going to, you know, baby him and limit his innings and maybe limit his effectiveness? Or are you just going to let him go? I'm really curious to see what Farhan means in that respect.
Yeah, well, you can't treat everybody the same.
Right.
I mean, there's guys who you can just tell by looking at them, they don't have it in them to be that kind of a guy who's going to be shutting down the door in the eighth inning with two guys on. But Derek Rodriguez, man, he looks like he's ready to go. He got a real late start. He wasn't a pitcher until late in life. His arm's fresh, and he's a warrior. He goes out there, and you can just tell that this is a guy who wants to get into the complete game category. You know, he wants to lead the league with three.
Yeah, that's probably all it'll take, right?
It took two last year.
Are you kidding me?
Two.
Two complete games led the bigs.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, my. I didn't realize it was that bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And he just has that look. You know, he's a guy that should be turned loose, and then you see what happens. You know, I mean, if you think, you know, he might get hurt. What kind of an attitude is that,
yeah,
you know, in any sport?
Yeah, I mean, running scared, you know, Bruce, when you're trying to avoid injury, that's when you're most likely to hurt yourself.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, exactly.
Play the game. Let's see. The Giants rotation as it stands right now, Madbum, Samardzija, Rodriguez, and then you've got this mishmash, which I don't know, you know, obviously they haven't figured it out yet, but you got Pomerantz, you got Holland, you got Suarez, you got Stratton. Tyler Beede is back up off the scrap heap. I thought that guy was going to be a bust, and now he's been a revelation thus far.
Yeah, he looks totally different out there. You know, I always talk to Mike Kruko and guys about mound presence, and, you know, you were a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to look the part as well as to perform the part. You know, somebody who's out there fidgeting and making all kind of weird facial, you know, expressions and raising his arm like it's hurt and putzing around behind the mound. You know, Beede has got some presence, and, you know, more to the point, he's throwing 97 with a nasty curveball.
Yeah,
he's really adjusted his mechanics, and he looks like a different guy. And you know, spring training can be the land of the great mirage, but I don't know. I think he's definitely going to be in that mix. And, you know, I think Pomerantz 2 years ago was a tremendous lights-out lefty with that big bender that's so tough on lefty hitters. And if he can be that guy, I think he can be a fixture in there.
Hey, Bruce, because you mentioned the spring training results, where do you stand on that? Because I've heard there a lot of people say, well, spring training results don't mean anything. Well, it depends. For me, it depends on the player. If you've already got a roster spot, then I'm not going to worry about your numbers in spring. But if you're competing for a roster spot, the results mean something. So you're maybe, whereas let's say you're a pitcher that has a spot in the rotation, you have the luxury of, I'm going to work on my changeup. I'm going to throw my changeup in fastball counts, and if they hit it, they hit it. But if you're competing for a rotation spot, you got to try to get outs.
Yeah, right. Established guys, you don't pay attention to it at all, or veteran guys who have 10 years worth of consistency on their track record. A bad spring isn't going to turn you off. Now, if somebody shows up out of nowhere, you don't really know about him, and he's hitting 459. I always think about Randy Elliott years ago with the Giants.
Right.
That's something that you may not want to trust, or a young pitcher coming out there. And surprising hitters who have never seen him, but it turns out he's really not that of a mystery, much of a mystery, and maybe he's not as great when the lights come on.
Yeah, and he's got number 89 on his back for a reason.
Now pitching number 108. Yeah, and I don't know. I've always been kind of skeptical of spring training results, but where it's most interesting is if a guy, say you got a guy who's, say a guy, a left-handed deadpool hitter who's been tormented by shifts, and he announces over the off season, I've been working on my off-field hitting in the cage and with coaches, and I'm gonna try to take that into the season. Well, how does he look doing that in spring training? That kind of stuff is really interesting.
Right. Dave Justice, remember when he had his, the one season with the Oakland A's?
Yeah.
He must have been like 2 for 37 or something to start the Cactus League. And it seemed like, okay, this is cause for concern now. And so me and Susan and back then Mark Sachs and all the beat writers were around him. And we kind of asked him about what's going on. And he was pissed at us for asking because he thought we should know better. And he said, hey, you guys don't know what I'm working on. And I'm thinking, well, if you're working on rolling over to second base, you're right where you want to be.
You got it down.
but he said, I recounted that conversation with him at about midseason when he was playing well. And he said, look, if I was rude, I was rude. I'm sorry. But I know how to get myself ready. And I don't need to explain that to you. If you ask me a question, I'll try to answer it. But that kind of speaks to, the veterans, they know what it takes, which is why Madison Bumgarner always seems to get knocked around at least a couple of times in Cactus League play.
Including this year. And he looks good to me. He's been on the tube a couple times, the rare times they've been on. And, you're just looking for the kinds of things that you want to see in him. The consistent arm slot, the deception of the curveball where guys don't quite square it up enough. And he's got a little more velocity, which is good. I mean, exactly. You got to measure it against the man and the track record.
The voice you hear is that of Bruce Jenkins. He's a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. If you want to follow him on Twitter, and I suggest that you do, it's at Bruce_Jenkins1. Does that mean there's a Bruce_Jenkins without a one?
Yeah, anytime you get an underscore, you're in trouble. Why couldn't it just be Bruce Jenkins, for crying out loud? Forget the one.
I know. Just say, I'm Jenkins. I'm a great sports writer. It's a given. All right, let's...
Actually, I'm Dan Jenkins. Look up.
Yeah, there you go. let's go over, let's cross the bay real quick and talk about Oakland A's baseball, which doesn't get nearly enough talk anywhere here in the Bay Area. We understand why. The Giants are the big boys in the market, but the A's have had a pretty quiet spring, which is, I'm sure, what Bob Melvin would prefer it be. When it's a quiet spring, that means uneventful, which usually means healthy. Chris Davis just came back yesterday. I think we can go ahead and write in permanent ink that he's going to hit 40 homers and drive in 100 RBIs and still not make
47.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the guy's phenomenal and doesn't get a whole lot of national run. But do you expect more of the same from the A's? You expect them to be able to continue what they started building on last year?
Yeah, I really like the team. I think it's a shame they lost Luke Roy. I thought that right away.
And yeah.
Herman's hurt. That's a problem. That shouldn't have happened. It's not like he signed for $18 million.
And how did they not go get Vogt if they're going to, the Giants end up with Vogt, then they should have been jumping all over that if they were going to have to say goodbye to Luke Roy.
Yeah, I know. So that there's that, and left field's kind of a crapshoot, but the rest of the lineup I really like. The infield is just tremendous. I mean, tons of potential there. Especially, Profar can finally, really relax and settle into the potential that he's always had. Corners are great. Semien gets better every year. the rotation isn't really thrilling to me, to hear names like Brett Anderson and Edwin Jackson come into play. It looks like they got a couple good starters. But
for some reason, I like that about the A's, that Jackson and Anderson are there. I like having the old hands.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's going to get him through it. But I just project like Wade. It'll be past the All-Star break, but all of a sudden you got Manaea and Puck and Cotton.
Yeah.
and maybe even Kaprielian coming on. These guys.
How about Lizardo? Have you gotten a load of that guy?
Yeah, Lizardo. I mean, he's definitely for real. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, they're not going to be looking at bullpenning or openers nearly as much if those guys, because those are all authentic big league starters. So if they can just stay close to Houston, which is going to be really hard. Mm-hmm. Houston is so good. I think the rest of the division doesn't scare them at all. If they can somehow stay remotely close to Houston and get those pitchers off the shelf, it'll be really interesting.
Houston's made like one mistake in 3 years, and it was leaving Ramon Laureano off the 40-man so the A's could come and steal him.
Yeah, there's a good example. He hasn't looked very good in spring, but you saw so much of him last year that to think that he's all of a sudden going to lose that job would be silly. Now, if he isn't hitting in July, that's one thing, but you know, they just the outfield outside of lefty, you know, Piscotty's great, and Laureano did so many great things last year. There's just a lot of excitement, and they've got power, they've got some speed, they've got youth. They're not the Giants,
but the Giants have Buster Posey after hip surgery. Humor me here, because I was heartened to hear that he had a hip problem that needed surgery.
Yes.
Because that at least tells me there's a reason for this mind-boggling lack of power we've seen over the past few years. You think that power might come back, or are those days gone?
The power, I'm not sure. I think the stroke and just his general comfort in the box is gonna come back. You know, he does a lot of hitting to the opposite field. He's not really obsessed with power. But, you know, he's a guy... he's the kind of guy that you never would worry about given full health. You know, he's Buster Posey. He's going to be great. But, you know, we'd throw the hip thing in there, and you really have to wonder. And, you know, some athletes don't really come back from the surgery that he had. But every indication is that he has. You know, the catching will put a toll on him. But to answer your question, I would expect about 20, 22 homers from him, which isn't great. I can't even remember what he hit last year. It seemed like about 8. But I think he'll have more power, and especially more gap power.
You know what's crazy is the last time the Giants had a hitter with 20 home runs. Do you know when that was, Bruce?
I think it was High Pockets Kelly in 1920.
Not quite that long ago, but it was 2015, Brandon Crawford.
Yeah.
That's kind of all you need to know about their power.
And I was looking back 50 years ago for a piece I'm working on, the Giants opening day lineup in 69. They led off with Mays, and then you had, you know, McCovey, Jim Rayhart, and Bobby Bonds, you know, the ascending Bobby Bonds. They had a little bit of power.
Just a little bit. I think the Giants would die to have just a little bit of that. But, hey, at least, like I said, I like so far what I've seen on the mound, and that's kind of always – I'm certainly not expecting them to win anything, but their recipe for success has traditionally been good on the mound, good with the glove, get some timely knocks. Hopefully they make – Oracle Park or whatever the hell they're calling it, a little bit more interesting this year because, again, off the field, not what we want to see from the Giants. Thank you so much for your time, Bruce. I really appreciate it, man.
Hey, always fun. Anytime.
All right. That's Bruce Jenkins of the San Francisco Chronicle. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at Bruce_Jenkins1. He truly is a local treasure. We're lucky to have him. We got a lot of great writers here in the Bay Area. John Shea, Henry Schulman, Susan Slusser. I know I'm just running down the Chronicle list, but that's the paper. That's my go-to paper. We had Dieter Kurtenbach a little bit earlier. He's a young up-and-comer with the San Jose Mercury News. We haven't gotten into much NFL, and we're obviously not going to because the show is going to end here pretty soon, and we're going to hand it off to University of North Carolina and Duke, greatest rivalry in college basketball. I hope you hang around and check that out afterwards. Rick Tittle is going to be taking over. I think that'll be around, I don't know, 4 o'clock or so. But tomorrow I'm with Coase for 4 hours, and we will get into the NFL, no doubt about that. The trade rumor that is starting to circulate and starting to get Raider Nation excited is Antonio Brown to Oakland. For the life of me, look, Antonio Brown's a great player, and if they get him, obviously they're a better team. But on the heels of trading away Amari Cooper, I think the fact that they're looking at Antonio Brown, doesn't it kind of say something about the way they felt about Amari Cooper? It does to me because, again, Cooper, when he came out, they said he was the most NFL-ready of any wide receiver prospect in a generation. And he certainly looked the part coming out of Alabama. Great body, great kid. Everybody likes him, hard worker. They say he ran great routes. They say he had great hands. Well, The hands weren't all that great at times when he was with Oakland. And there were games where he would go bananas, score a couple TDs, get 212 yards on 8 receptions or something. And you're thinking, okay, that's his breakout game. Finally, Cooper has shown up. We've got our number one for the next decade. But then he'd disappear for the next couple weeks. Now, were nagging injuries part of it? It could have been. Possible. But if you're hurt, sit out. If you can't be Amari Cooper with that little injury, you need to sit out. I don't buy the injury thing. I just don't think. Look, to be a number one receiver, you have to have a certain mentality. It's just like being the alpha male on a basketball team or of a pitching staff in the big leagues. You've got to have something in that 6 to 8 inches between the ears. And I know you're saying 8 inches between the ears. That's a big head. That's a Bruce Bochy head. You need to have something special inside the helmet to be a number one receiver. I don't know that Cooper's got that. I think Brown does, but does he bring more trouble than you want in the locker room? That's obviously the question that the Raiders are going to have to weigh. What happened to Antonio Brown going to the Niners? I don't know, but that's kind of disappeared. Jerry Rice was openly lobbying. Antonio Brown was lobbying. So where does that stand? I'm going to do some homework over the night, and I will have 4 hours with Mr. Cozumel tomorrow. Noon until 4. And remember, if you're not listening to the radio tomorrow, tune in. Set your alarm for 4:59 Monday. I will be on until 6 o'clock Monday through Friday next week. I'm Michael Urban, 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.